Welcome everyone to the Unlocked Basketball Podcast presented by Locked In Basketball. Today we have Coach Hout from the Be Elite Basketball out in the Gold Coast, Queensland. He has extensive 38-year experience originally from the US and now the last 5 years in Australia, helping bridge a gap between the Australian basketball and the American basketball. Having coached SBL level as well as extensive business experience at public speaking, mentorship and so on, as well as even publishing his own book called Time Out. Welcome, Coach, to the podcast.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate that.
So we're going to get started from the how you got involved with basketball in the US. Like, how did you, were you a player yourself, where you kind of fell into it or purposefully decided to make it a bit of a career?
Well, I think what happened was I was looking to give back to the community. I was 22, 23 years old, and I had just been married. I took on three stepdaughters at the time I was 23. Their dad had passed away previously. And so I had three girls. I loved basketball from my high school days. I didn't play in college. However, I was just very involved in high school. And at 23, I went to the local YMCA, Boys Club, you know, in those organizations down there, volunteered my time and started giving back to the community, coaching boys basketball, because my three daughters eventually became cheerleaders. So they never came down the basketball route. They were actually right. Cheerleaders. So that's how I got started. I went to a local high school, applied for a position. I think I got $200 for a six-month season. That was my first coaching experience at a public high school at the junior high level. And then over the years, moved up to the JV level, which is the varsity second team, and then the varsity level. And then at about 27, so about 4 years later, I moved to Arizona from New York. That's where I grew up in New York. And then started doing the same thing, coaching at different schools. And got involved with AAU programs, which is a huge platform back in the States. And then was there for 27 years coaching, and then moved out with my Australian wife to the Gold Coast from Scottsdale, Arizona in 2013. So time flies. It's now 7 years I've been here. And then I went down to the local basketball association, put my hand up, yeah, and got involved with the local association here. And then in January of 2019, I started my own Be Elite Basketball Academy.
Mm. Tell us a bit about the Be Elite Basketball Academy. What's the purpose of the business at the moment?
Yeah, you know, the purpose behind it was there was a gap of 1 year where I wasn't able to participate coaching as a volunteer at the local rep organization here. Mm. And I thought to myself, where does a basketball coach who's been coaching for 38 years now, where does he coach if he's not able to coach at the local basketball association? And there really wasn't anything other than, let's say, the high schools. And they have a very limited program, a very limited schedule. And so I thought to myself, why don't I, you know, set up the academy as well as reach out to AAU back in the United States. And what I did was I met these gentlemen from Melbourne, Brett and Pete, and the three of us reached out and spoke to AAU back in the States, which I can tell you a little bit more about in a moment. Mm-hmm. And that was started another platform for young men and women to play mm-hmm. games. So the Be Elite Basketball Academy primarily is to educate and improve the skill level of the current local players. We work with primarily 13 and above. The club and rep organizations here in Queensland do a very good job of getting the kids engaged and having fun and developing their skills. However, when they get to about 13, 14, they send the kids that are a little bit more committed and focused mm-hmm. and want to use basketball as a stepping stone for maybe playing it overseas in college or semi-pro one day, then that's where I like to take them. So the advanced level kid, to bring them from advanced to elite. So that's the purpose behind why I've set up Be Elite.
And how do you structure the elite? Do you do individuals, group workouts, or a bit more specific workouts in that, like your shooting technique or so on?
Well, I like to develop the all-around athletes. So for the I have advanced group sessions or advanced individual, and then I have elite group or elite individual session. And with the advanced, I usually go with a 25-minute segment of ball handling and somewhat cardiovascular, 5 minutes of note-taking, hydration, and then another 25 minutes of defensive stuff, slides, things of that nature, and plyometrics, 5 minutes of note-taking, hydration, and then the last 25 minutes, we do shooting of all kinds, and then we wrap up with note-taking and hydration. So it's a 90-minute session. For the advanced level, we do 45 minutes of ball handling and cardio, plyometrics, and then 45 minutes of shooting. And so I like to develop the all-around player.
So sure. The plyometrics is a good one. That's not a very commonly used strategy. The very cool way of going. So let's go back to the AAU concept of you grew up as a coach through the AAU system and the varsity system there. How does that compare to the Australian basketball over here?
So AAU platform is a complement to the existing high school system over in the States. So basically you do have high school ball and then you have your local club association ball. And so the high school ball is far better than the club association level. In Queensland, the club association level tends to be a little bit better level of competition, more wide scale, larger scale than the high school system. So it's a little, it's reversed. So in the States, a lot of development happens through 6 days a week trainings for 6 months, and high school ball, you'll play close to 30 games, including a few games in playoffs. So it's very extensive. It's 2 hours a day. Plus kids come in early to do shooting or they stay late and do weightlifting. 6 days a week for 6 months. It's very, very extensive. Very cool. So
yeah.
Yeah. Nothing like that here, even at the rep or junior level. The whole idea of putting B Elite together was to kind of raise that level to expose the kids here to what they would expect over there if they were playing there, to kind of train at the same level. The AAU is a platform over in the States that when the high school season is not playing, the kids are allowed to play in tournaments, basically when the college coaches can go see them, which is April and July. And so there'll be massive tournaments all throughout the United States and every city around the U.S. During April and July to expose these kids, let these kids play, usually with an all-star type team. Now, some of these kids will be played with their, you know, their junior high team. They start these games at, I think it's 7, 8 years old now.
Okay. Right.
So 7 year old tournaments, 8 year old tournaments, 9 year old tournaments, 10 year old tournaments. Wow. All over the country. It's insane. So organizations pop up, or even a dad will put together a team if he's got a good couple of kids, and they'll go out and compete. So the whole idea of this platform in the States is to really allow the higher level kids, not the 8, 9, 10 year olds, but the 16, the 17, 18 year old kids, exposure to, let's say, college coaches that are recruiting at those times of the year. There really isn't anything here in Australia, with the exception of the state or national teams, where these kids get a lot of great quality exposure. The coaches over in the U.S., they know, because Australia's up and coming when it comes to basketball compared to a lot of other countries around the world, more so than in Italy, or more so than in Spain, or more so than somewhere down in South America. So Australia is where coaches have their eye on. A lot of talent coming up, as you can see in the NBA. They've got their eye on all of the state kids. But how many kids are on the state team? 10, 12 kids, right? Two ultimates. And so, and if you're any good at like 16, the odds are you probably make the team when you're 17. And you're only going to get better, so the odds are you'll make the team. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, exactly.
Those same kind of kids kind of show up every year on those teams. Well, what happened to the 11th kid? What happened to the 15th kid? He's that much worse than the 10th kid or the 9th kid? Yeah, he may not be the same level as the number one kid on the state team or the national. Why are we missing this kid? So he's falling through the cracks. So we had hoped to develop this AAU program, which started back in October of 2019 with a tournament in your town at Dandenong, Spring Madness, AAU Australia Spring Madness. And there'll be others this year, hopefully, when COVID we get a handle on COVID. So we're developing this platform throughout Australia so that if you don't make your high school team, you don't make that state team, but you got some talent, let's say, you can play with, you know, like with your own guys, or a coach can put together a team and play at these tournaments. The key behind AAU Australia, which you can find on aauaustralia.com.au, is that Bowler TV has gotten the rights to live stream games back to the States. So let's say you're a player and you want to be seen. If you're in contact with some college coaches back in the U.S. want to play there in a year, say, you can let them know, hey, I'm playing this tournament that's being live streamed by Bowler TV at this time. Now, it may be the time they're sleeping, but they can download. They can download those games that downloaded. The coaches all belong to Bowler TV. They get the service for free.
Right.
And so they'll pull up your game. They'll watch number 25, and they'll see how you played during the game. Because if you've been following these college coaches, they don't want your highlight reel anymore. Because you know that the players are only going to put their best offensive moves. They might play five games and grab three really great offensive moves out of five games. You know, well, you look like a superstar. Same thing on defense, same thing, right?
Yeah.
But these college coaches, what they want to see, they want to see the whole game. And they want to see how you play on the court. They want to see how you engage on the sideline. They want to watch you, how you engage with and communicate with your coach. They want to watch how you support the team while you're taken out on a timeout. They actually want to see your whole attitude, your whole persona, and not just your highlight film. So they're able to catch that through those games that you play on that level. And I'm not sure down in Melbourne, I'm sure it's different around the country, but I don't see or notice too many games that are being live streamed back to the States or that are being downloaded for kids to use as a recruiting tool for themselves, if that makes sense.
The success rate over to the US, it seems that the kids that not necessarily make the NBA, but they make a college and make it decent, they usually come back to Australia and have an NBL contract lined up for them, or at least a high-level semi-professional.
You know Peter Hooley?
Yep.
From LA, right?
Yeah. Well, I actually coached him last year.
Did you really?
Yeah. At Kilsyth. I was an assistant coach and he was at Kilsyth last year. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So he went over to play at Albany in New York.
Mm.
And he played for a coach named Will Brown. I coached Will Brown when he was 15 and 16 years old.
Wow.
I coached him at high school ball when he was 15 and 16 years old. He's a Division I coach, and he had four players from Australia on his team.
Yep.
And we talk all the time, and I look to – you know, support him and going, hey, keep your eye on this kid. Or I have a kid coming up now who's 16, who's phenomenal. So, yeah. So he comes, Peter Hooley, did a great job in college, right? Mm. Did a fantastic job in Division I school, full scholarship, comes home, and he's not playing in the NBL. That's not a bad gig.
That's not, not at all.
That's not a bad gig.
Yeah, there's a few big games and then the contract's sitting there on the table for you. So that's really good and extensive. And then do you think especially most of your experience being up at Queensland, have you had much experience of outside of the States, in Victoria or New South Wales or anywhere else in Australia?
So I've coached here in Queensland for 7 years, Southeast Queensland.
Mm.
So I've had exposure to all the teams and the type of coaching and the type of game that's played all the way up through Sunshine Coast and then west to Toowoomba.
Mm.
The only time, beside watching video, the only time I had exposure of playing live against other teams outside of Queensland was last October at the AAU Australia Spring Madness. Excuse me, they had teams from Sydney and Victoria, Melbourne, the Melbourne area, some country towns. And so we did play. I had two teams down there. I had a 16 and under and a 14 and under team. Mm. A 14 and under team, boys, were in the grand finals. Unfortunately, lost. But our 16s, we went 500. And the difference between, if this is what you're asking, the difference between what I've noticed in the play was that, the kids were more aggressive on defense. And two, the actual referees let them play aggressively. And I actually wrote a blog when I came back after that tournament. And I wrote a blog basically saying that Basketball Queensland's got to let these kids hear. They got to let them play a little bit. They got to let them play with a bump and grind a little bit, because when they're playing against these teams from down south, they're eating our lunch. And if you look at the national champions, the national championships, state championships and stuff, you'll see that, you know, out of the last, I think I looked it up, last 40 years, Queensland boys have won maybe like three times, four times. The girls have won four or five times. But for the most part, it's split between New South Wales and Victoria. And so that was, if that's, does that answer your question? Like, that's the notice that I had around the difference in style, was that a lot more aggressive kids coming from the Melbourne, Victoria, you know, New South Wales, as opposed to Queensland, much a little bit softer.
And then I know it's a tough comparison, but then how would that stack against the US kids of, or, you know, we'll backpedal a little bit here. Say your high school level, the work, an individual player at a high school level, what sort of work's he put in comparison to, say, a similar level over here? Is it a realistic comparison, or?
People might hate me for saying this, but unless they've actually lived there and actually coached high school ball there, they can say what they want, but the truth is the truth. I've had an experience of both. You got to understand that basketball over there is 10 months minimum, 10 months a year, because there are other tournaments for AAU over the summer. It's just that college coaches don't necessarily, you know, recruit. So you can still have tournaments, but they just can't recruit at. So there are still tournaments, even though April and July are those 2 months. So to answer your question, at a high school level, we used to coach, we used to practice 2 hours in the afternoon, but I'd have the guys come in at least three times a week to do weightlifting, and then 3 days a week to do shooting outside of the 2 hours. So the weightlifting would be usually like on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then shooting would be Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday mornings. And so that's in addition to a 2 hour practice. And on Saturdays, we usually snuck in like a 3 hour practice because nobody was on campus. And so no one ever threw us out of the gym. You're supposed to go 2 hours, no more than 2 hours. So just imagine that for 6 months. Okay. That's just high school. But now these kids go play AAU. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to continue doing the weightlifting. They're not going to continue necessarily doing additional shooting, which they all should. But then they get to play games and they practice. So AAU, you get to practice twice a week, minimum. With my AAU teams, I used to go Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturdays. And then we'd go on these tournaments where we'd play, you know, three games a day for 3 or 4 days. Wow. So constant basketball. And then before school started in September, I tell the kids about halfway through August, don't pick up a basketball. Like for 6 weeks before October starts, when we start practicing again, don't pick up a basketball. You got to walk away. And a lot of kids, some of them would play football, our gridiron. Some of them would play soccer. So they'd have another sport that they would play. So they weren't always constantly bouncing the ball. But nowadays with scholarships and how competitive things are, kids are doing more and more one sports as opposed to, you know, multiple sports, baseball in the States. I don't see that. So to answer your question, I don't really see that much time every day, 6 days a week into kids' games. Granted, some schools are basically basketball schools. Some schools offer scholarships. So then you play basketball. And yes, they'll put in more time. They'll ask the kids to come in early. I've seen that. Some of the there's a couple of old boys schools here, private schools that offer scholarships, and they'll put in more time. But generally speaking, across the board, it's like night and day. There are good schools that do put in a little bit extra time.
And willing to. So the adjustment from going an insane workload to, and the schooling system's really embracing that, to coming to Australia where it's kind of seen as a leisurely activity. And if you're good at it, there's a little bit of extra, but kind of good luck to you, unless you go to a specialized school. How did you coping with that kind of adjustment as a coach?
That was part of the reason why I opened up Be Elite, because I was a little frustrated that there wasn't total access. I mean, to having access to gyms and court hire all the time. And when you did, it was really pricey. So it was just, I was saying, hey, there are some extraordinarily talented young people. However, they're just doing enough to be the starter on their team. And that's not good enough. If you tell me, hey, I want to go play college ball, that's not good enough. I know what you're going to need to do, and you're going to need to put in a lot more time on a daily basis, not even on a weekly basis, like every day. I always say that shooting a basketball is like playing golf. If anyone's ever played golf, to be good at golf, you got to practice. You got to practice more than you play.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to get on driving range. You got to get on putting green. I mean, you got to practice a lot. It's like you practice more than you play. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I don't love golf. So it's like, I don't want to practice more, but I love basketball. So I would practice more basketball. And so again, only if kids come to me and they say, I want to play overseas. And I go, okay, you ready? Because here we go. It's going to be, your workouts are going to be a lot different than what you used to. I can tell you that. And kids walk away and they go, wow, that was intense. I go, yeah, you know, that's intense. That's what you need to do.
Yeah.
That's a wake-up call.
Yeah, definitely. And then the kids that are going over and would struggle essentially in the system over in the US or the workloads. And the college burnout is quite high.
Yeah, I talked to a handful of young people and their parents about my kid did go over and then came back. One, it was a little more, it was over their head. It was too intense. The school workload was too much, or they were just plain old homesick. I mean, you know, everybody wants to, you know, kids come to me and go, hey, I want to play overseas. And it's like, okay, here's the reality. The odds are you're only going to come back once a year for the next 4 years to see your family. And you might see them for like 3 or 4 weeks, and then you're back on a plane, you're back over there. So if you want to only see your family for roughly 4 months for the next 4 years, that's what it's going to be like. And a lot of kids go, no, I love it here, especially at the Gold Coast. Like, why would I want to leave this area and go in northern United States in the snow? I mean, Peter Hooley went to Albany. Albany looks a lot different than Adelaide, okay? There's plenty of snow, and it's really cold there, and – you know, if you're committed to it, that's what you'll do. But I've talked to enough people that have said, yeah, 2 years was enough for me. And got a young man just talked to recently, went 2 years to Iowa. Compared to the Gold Coast, it's like, it's flat, it's cold, it's cornfields, there's not a lot to do there. It's just like, in the wintertime, it lasts forever. Gray skies, I mean, kids don't realize that that's part of it that they got to handle. And then the workload is pretty intense too. It's very competitive over there when it comes to education.
And because of the obvious thing of the population in the US is far greater than what it is in Australia. So to really get ahead of the rest of the pack, you have to put that work in, and kind of otherwise you're just going to be a mass or a number, and then hope to God that your body doesn't fail on you on the way.
And a lot of parents don't realize that. So when I take them on and I go, look, this is a program I'm going to put together for you, or this is our team, and what we're going to do is we're going to run, we're going to play tough defense, we're going to be in your face, press you all over the court. I mean, a lot of kids go, what the heck? This is not what we do at rep ball. This is not what we do in high school team. It's like, well, if you tell me you want to play at the next level, I'm getting you prepared. And if you think I'm tough, wait till you get a college coach who takes no BS at no time, and you've got four other assistant coaches taking no BS, and you got two managers, and you got a school with, you know, all these kids asking you, how come you missed that shot? You know, how come you did this? How come you're not playing? You know, you think your head's tough now. So there's a lot of talent in Australia. I think, though, that the mindset needs to shift a little bit to get everyone up to speed, to like embrace it, to really embrace it. And the kids that do go over there, they have a great experience. They have a great education. Hey, listen, you get a college scholarship, Division I, Division II. Division II is a great opportunity. NAIA, Division I. I mean, there's scholarships. You're going to school, cost 50 grand at a Division II school. That's $200,000. That's US. That's like 300,000 Australian. I'm a parent. Like, yeah, if my kid can get a $300,000 scholarship for 4 years of education and walk away with a great degree, I don't care if he plays in the NBA. He's got a great degree. He's an educated young man or woman. Nothing wrong with that.
No.
And those opportunities don't exist here. They really don't. And so if I have kids that come to me and go, I want to play, I prepare them. And it's unlike anything they've experienced in their short 12 years, 14 years, 16 years of playing basketball and living here.
Do you have like people who come through your system at Be Elite and then don't choose to go that college pathway or AAU pathway and then choose to kind of climb the ladder just primarily in Australia? Is there a decent success rate of that through that, or a better chance if you go to the US and come back?
Well, what level are you referring to? Are you referring to like semi-pro?
Yeah, let's go for the semi-pro to, yeah, semi-pro.
If you want to play semi-pro, the only way you're going to prepare yourself is going to a Division I or Division II college over there, because there's more competition. The competition is more intense. I mean, you've watched college basketball over there. The coaches are insane during a game. During a game, when the cameras are on them, they're standing in front of 50, 60,000 people, and they're insane in their player's face on the court, right? Can you imagine what they're like behind the closed door at practice? So if you're getting to see that when the cameras are on them and they know the cameras are on them, you just imagine how insane they get, all right? That's the intensity that is required to cause young people to reach their full potential. You see, everyone thinks that just by talking to you nicely, I'll get the best out of you. Very rarely can someone self-motivate. The mind doesn't work that way, okay? My professional business career has to do with mindset training and personal development, personal growth, and how our brain operates the rest of our being, if you will. You cannot self-motivate. You've got to have accountability. You've got to be held accountable to whatever standard that you are being asked to meet or that's being set for yourself. Because you can set a great bar for yourself and say, hey, I'm going to accomplish this. But you know what? If you do it alone, it's not going to happen. The odds of it happening are minuscule. There's got to be some form of accountability, and that's what the value of a coach has to do in performance training, if you will.
How is the communication from the accessibility from the college coaches or the high school coaches? Are they in their face, or do they give them space sort of thing, or you kind of...
Here's the communication. It's direct and it's honest.
Yep.
It's direct and it's honest. Yeah. And most young people don't appreciate that. You don't appreciate it until you're my age and you look back and go, wow, I'm glad that that person said and did what they did, because one, I realized they cared about me, and two, they actually... were a little bit smarter than I was, since, you know, I'm 16 and they're 35 and they've been around the block a few times, I'm guessing. But at 16, I don't know if I want to listen to that person because I think I have all the answers. So the reality is, the difference is over there, it's direct and it's honest. And most of the time, people don't want to hear direct feedback and honest feedback. They don't. And so therein lies the struggle. You know, we all have this need to be right. Right? That's how our mind operates, so that we can manage and get through the day and get through the week and get through our life, so that we can get to be right on what we believe in. So if I believe that I'm doing my basketball stuff this way and it's the right way, and you tell me it's not and it should be done differently, I look at you and go, oh, hold on a second, and all of a sudden there's some resistance. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
And it happens on the court, it happens off the court. So the communication on the court is usually direct and it's honest, because you only have, let's say, a 2-hour practice. So you don't have a lot of time to actually explain why, as a coach, I want to do this or I think you should do that. There's got to be a level of trust that's built through level of communication, which is usually done off the court. So when we talk about communication off the court, that's where the door is always open. You can always call me. You can always text me. You can always meet with me. You know how many times I've met my players for a coffee, for a lunch, for a breakfast, for a meal, all the time. I find out about them. I find out what makes them tick. But more importantly, they hear a little bit more about why I do what I do, why I say what I say, so that during practice, and you only got 2 hours, I don't spend 15 minutes explaining to Johnny or Sam or Sally why I want them to do this or why I think the team should do that. They get all of that off the court. And that's where communication is really valuable, in allowing your players to speak. Now, they may say and do, and I may listen, and I'll explain why I think I'm going to continue this path. Or the good news for someone like myself, as opposed to a young coach or a rookie coach, is I have a lot of experience with my methodology having success. I had a lot of success as a result of the way I do things and how I coach. You know, it's called like an old school style coaching. I wrote a blog about it about 2 weeks ago. And there's nothing wrong with old school, all right? It's the value system that old school's about, because many different people coach many different ways. That doesn't mean that they're old school. It's what their standards are, because the standards of an old school coach are very high, and I don't usually lower them to the player. I ask the player to meet the standard as opposed to lowering the standard to satisfy them. Well, that's not what kids like nowadays, players like nowadays. They're like, hey, I don't want to really stretch that much. Then again, it all comes back to, why are you here? Why are you playing? Why are you on this team? If you want to go to the next level, I'm telling you, I cannot lower the bar. It's got to be here. So all of that conversation takes place off the court, before practice, after practice. You know, if we're talking to coaches on this podcast, you know, be firm, be direct, be honest, right? And the kids will know that while you're on the court that you really care, because you're prepared, you got a lesson plan, you're all set to go. You break out your sessions every 10 minutes, you know, 15 minutes if you want to run up and down for a few, but it's boom, just really organized. You know what you're talking about. You've been educated. You go to coaching clinics. And so they'll respect you for that. They may not like it, but who cares? No coach is in it to be liked. No one coaching it. And if you are coaching so that the kids will like you, find a different profession or volunteer for a different sport. Because quite frankly, you either love me or you hate me, but no one really likes me. And I'm okay with that.
Well, that's the thing though. You're there for a purpose, a mutual goal. And it's like, hey, and it's to make it the players better in the long run, whether they, as you said, foresee it at the time or not, or willing to listen. But later on down the future, I'm sure they would be mentioning, go, hey, remember that coach who maybe do this, even if they didn't make a high level, I'm sure it affects them off the court in their personal day.
Alex, I could tell you some funny stories. I coached these two young men in high school for 2 years, back-to-back years, 11th and 12th grade. They go off to college. They go off to the same college, right? They go off to the University of Arizona. And they are volunteer at the local, while they're in college, local basketball club. And so they're coaching together, one team. And one guy's got five guys down one end, and the other guy's got five guys down the other end. And so one's teaching offense, one's teaching defense. And so I go to lunch with them when they come home from college, and the three of us having lunch. And Kyle says, "Hey, coach, I got to tell you a funny story." And he tells me about how Ron was down the other end of the court, and Ron's yelling something at the kids. Yeah. And he goes, I turn around and I yell, "Hey, Coach Alp, what are you doing down there?" He goes, "He sounded just like you." He's yelling the same things, yelling at the kids the same way, saying the same thing. He goes, "I had to turn around and stop." I go, "It sounded just like you." So I hear some of those stories like that, that the kids pick up certain, you know, mannerisms or the certain ways of coaching. And that's how you learn. You know, that's how I learned coaching. So if you're a young coach or a rookie coach or early on, it's good to have a philosophy. Be your own man, you know, be your own woman. And as long as you're, you know, learning about the game, you're disciplined, you're focused, you give 100% during the practices, the kids will see that you really do care and they'll respect you. And then you build that communication and that trust, you know, off the court when you have plenty of time to do that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. How do you avoid the communication? So essentially, yeah, avoiding the communication breakdowns, but putting the extra work out off the court, building those relationships, right?
And it's going to break down. I, as a coach, do not communicate the same way with every single player. They've got to be communicated a little differently based on their personality. Okay. And it's not changing, you know, my philosophy or my values. It's just, you know, some kids you can like raise your voice and be intense with them and they'll respond. And then there's other kids, you do the exact same thing and they'll shrink. Well, how is that supporting that young man or woman if they're shrinking? I'm supposed to be a responsible adult, so then I need to change the way I communicate to them, right? So I think communicating, whether it's on the court or off the court, is tailored to the young person without surrendering your value system or letting the bar drop or your standard to go down, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. And to stay on top of your game and of keeping or not being kind of left in the past, being in the game for such a long time, how do you stay current sort of thing? Or are you reading or are you attending? What are you attending and so on?
I'm at a point now where I'll get a lot of information from college coaches. The college game is more like the game I enjoy coaching, and it's more along the lines of who I'm preparing for the next level. So I'm working mainly with young people. Mm. If I work with an older person or a professional or a semi-pro guy, they're usually working on skills, specific skills, shooting or foot skills or conditioning. So outside of the professional semi-pro, I'm really working a lot with young people that are looking to play at college or playing college and want to continue. And so I'll watch a lot of game film from certain coaches. Some of my friends are still coaching at the Division I level, Division II level. Some of my players, old players, are coaching, assistant coach at Gonzaga and head coach at Albany and a few other places. I kind of stay current with, hey, what are they doing offensively? What are they doing defensively? You found a lot of information on YouTube as to what certain coaches are teaching. And so although I don't get out to coaching clinics, I have a tendency to give more coaching clinics. So I've been doing a lot of offering a lot of coaching clinics to different associations in and around Queensland. And I used to do that back in the day. Mm. But when I started coming up as a rookie coach, I went to a lot of coaching clinics. There was a basketball, Converse was a big company back in the old days. So Converse used to put on these three-day coaching clinics, and they'd have all these Division I coaches come in. There's also a great opportunity for young coaches to volunteer and coach summer camps and clinics. And at night when the campers go to bed or they go home, the coaches usually get together. And so that's always an opportunity to kind of keep your ear open to what are some of the older guys talking about and how they do things if they're successful. And then what are some of the young guys doing? What are they learning from as new assistants and stuff at up there would be the college level. Here, I guess it would be high. The performance is a lot of performance programs in the different, basketball, Queensland basketball, Victoria, where they have performance programs. So they usually get better coaches there. So when you're in and around those guys, kind of listen up. So for me, I get it from college coaches to see what these young guys are starting to put in. And quite frankly, to be quite honest, they're pretty much teaching the same thing I've been teaching all these years too. They just use different language. They really do. They use different language. And every once in a while, I'll pick up a new technique. But, when it comes to shooting, there's really not a new technique coming out of the sky to learn. It's usually systems. It's usually an offense, or it's usually a defensive system, or why they do certain things on team defense. And so I'll pick up that. But I'm always a student. I'm always looking to see who's doing something really well. Coach K, Villanova, certain teams that are doing really well, Virginia. I like to follow, see what these guys are doing, improve what I'm doing necessary. Mm,
absolutely. You're much of a reader of books or anything? In fact, you have your own book.
I have my own book. Yeah. I think over there. Yeah. I wrote it back in 2009. I have like basically two lives. I have the basketball life, and then I have the life in and around the personal development and personal growth industry and arena. Mm-hmm. And basically, I'm what's referred to as a self-awareness trainer. And so I've been to four continents and 13 countries for week-long seminars. And so I cause people to take action by discovering what's holding them back and then helping them break through to get past those, if you will, what's holding them back. So I read a lot quantum physics type stuff and metaphysical. I do some work in and around the mindset training and things of that, right? Like Buddha's Brain is a great book that if you're interested in neural paths and the the neurology behind the brain and how it works and why it works. And you can teach old dogs new tricks. It is something that people say, you can't teach old dogs new tricks. Well, actually you can, because you can form new neural paths that create change in people. So, you know, a lot of people, even in the basketball world, I work with them in and around mental visualization, mental pictures, visualization. I also work with them on developing confidence in themselves when that little voice in their head says, no, you're going to miss that shot, or you're not that good, or this guy's going to beat you. You got to figure out how to deal with that. So those are kind of my two worlds, the personal growth and mindset stuff and basketball stuff. So
That's interesting, the visualization, and that's a interesting topic with the, it's recently grown in sport for quite a bit across all facets of, if you visualize your goal and that business mentality, if you visualize its success, it comes to you in fortune, which is sport seems to be adopting on a broad scheme.
They're finally catching up.
Yeah. And so your business experience, obviously translates quite well to sport, or basketball in particular. Like, absolutely. What are the techniques, or why do you think it translates so well?
Well, so some of the techniques that I use with players is a few things. One, I have them carry around a goal card. I'm trying to think where I have one right here. On the goal card, on one side of the goal card is what have I done today to accomplish this goal? Mm. And then on the other side, it says, I will, and then you fill in your goal. I will, you know, make, you know, 20 out of 22 shots, or 20 out of 25 shots every day for the next 30 days. And you sign it and you date it, and you'll accomplish that on a particular deadline date. And then you carry that with you. And then when you touch it, have a mental picture of yourself seeing yourself shoot and make 22 shots, or 22 out of 22. Let's just use 22 out of 22.
Yeah.
So the whole point of the card is to connect the brain to form a picture, a movie in your head of you accomplishing that goal. That's one technique. Every time you touch that card and you move it, it should trigger your brain to visualize seeing yourself shoot 22 right in a row. Boom, 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 boom. Mm. Another technique I've used with semi-pro and professional athletes is I'll have them record 1 minute, and I think it's about 5 second to 10 second highlights of themselves. So one minute video of themselves would be about, let's say 5 to 6 different clips of themselves shooting free throws, set up through the ball going through. And then maybe another one is shooting 3-point jump shots. And then another one's playing really great defense. Maybe another one's, you know, making really great passes for an assist. And then what happens is every hour on the hour, no matter where you are, you run the video, the 1 minute video. And so throughout the day, you're programming your mind, okay, 1 minute of you shooting threes, never missing, in different game situations. And then you just put it away. And then the next hour at the top of 1 o'clock, no matter where you are, you stop, you watch it. Okay, you put it back in your pocket. 2 o'clock, watch it again. 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. And you program your brain, seeing yourself making all these shots, or playing great defense and getting a steal, or making these unbelievable passes. And I say 6 little clips. You can do 7 clips. You can do 8 clips. Mm. But they're at least 5 seconds long, you know, somewhere in that. So you're catching the pass. You're looking up, you're making the shot, it's going through. So anywhere between, you know, like 5 seconds around there. And so you can put, you know, 10 of them on there.
Wow.
So that's another great technique. That's another great technique.
And then so from prescribing that to a person, or have you seen a rapid growth from on-court performance?
Yeah. I mean, I can think of one guy who played for the Guam national team. He was a very average shooter. And he was shooting like 60% from the field and about 45% from 3-point line, and shot 85% from the free throw line, where he was shooting under 50, under 40, and under like 60%. Oh yeah. It's definitely measurable. So what we do is we have them shoot. So we have a baseline And then we monitor it every couple of weeks. And then after about 3 or 4 weeks, we change it up. So we don't watch the same one for the next 6 months, the same videos, the same goal card. You change the goal card often, and then you change the video. And it takes time. But, you know, I tell these guys, everything takes time. So it's up to you to put the time in to make these different clips. And everybody has highlights of themselves. So you just have to scroll through and find, you know, those shots of defense.
Wow. That's a very interesting off-court practice you can do there.
There's a few other things, but those are two of the main ones that I have is the goal card, which triggers the time you touch it, it triggers the movie in your mind. And then when you go to bed, here's another technique. When you go to bed every night, whatever one particular skill you want to develop short term, you just, as you're falling asleep, you just see yourself doing that particular skill over and over again, and then you fall asleep. So again, you're programming your mind. Same thing the next night. You do that for 7 days in a row, and then maybe you change it to something else. Now, there's a book out there. It was written by Stan Kellner back in the, like 70s, 80s. Stan Kellner actually coached Mitch Kupchak, who played for like the Lakers and played in North Carolina, played for the Lakers. Mitch Kupchak became the general manager for the Lakers before your time. But Stan Kellner wrote this book while Mitch was in high school, and he called it Basketball Cybernetics. Now, have you ever heard of Maxwell Maltz?
The concept I have.
Maxwell Maltz wrote a book called Psycho Cybernetics, and he was one of the first researchers to find out that your mind doesn't know the difference between a real or a vividly imagined experience. Your brain doesn't know the difference between having a real experience or if you vividly imagine it. If you vividly imagine it, the brain thinks you actually experienced it.
Right.
Doesn't know the difference. So when you program yourself at night and you vividly imagine yourself developing that skill, it can improve that skill. Now, there's been science behind this. They took free throw shooters, and all they did was shoot free throws. Another group, all they did was visualize shooting free throws. And then they had the next group that did both, visualized it and shot it. Which one do you think was the worst performing? The guy that shot him, the guy that just visualized him, or the guy that did both? Which one was the worst?
Just visualized, would it?
The guy that actually shot him improved the least. The guy that visualized him improved second best, and the guy that did both improved the most. So the guy that actually shot him improved the least.
Wow.
The guy that just visualized it improved a little more, and they did this with not just one guy. They did this with many, many people, like with many, many basketball players. They did a study on that. And then, of course, the technique of physically and then visualizing, they improved the most.
A case study, not to do with sport, but there was a case study of an extreme instance of reprogramming the mind. This was in this sense completely, whether it was achievable or not. And they got they made a mock trial of a law case and put this person who was completely innocent of saying you murdered this person and so on.
Yeah.
By the end of the case went for about 12 months or so. And by the end of the case, the person who every day was told the same thing, it was an isolated environment. And then every time, and then by the time it came to that 12 months, they were convinced they had murdered the person and could tell every little detail that they'd fed him over that 12 months, which then I was like, holy shit.
Pretty sad that they did that, you know, that they convinced somebody that the guy
which they didn't, like, they were nowhere near, they weren't involved, they're completely set up, and but they were convinced every little detail they had down as if they were actually there, but they had no involvement, zero involvement.
So they did this test where they took a guy's real arm. He had his arms out on the table, and you couldn't see his real arm. But then they put a fake arm on the inside, so they had a fake arm here. And then after a while, the guy would hit the fake arm, and the guy would like jump and go, "Ah, that hurt!" And then they would put pins in the real arm. Now remember, the brain couldn't see the second arm. It was something here. They're putting pins in him. He couldn't feel it. But then they'd hit him on the hand with the rubber hand. He'd be like, "Ow, that hurt."
Wow.
Yeah. So the brain is extraordinarily powerful. Yeah. And so I use it to support these young men and women in visualizing what they want to accomplish. Mm. And so it's very powerful. And yeah, you track it and you see that there's improvement all the time if the young people are actually putting it into practice. Mm. So these are just little techniques that I might use that maybe other people might not or may not think there's value in them. But mm. I know based on my experience, research and things of that nature, science, real science now, mm. that it certainly can improve the player.
Absolutely. So there you go. There's some tips off the court as well. That's about everything I had for you today. Is there anything you would like to add in, Coach?
You know what? If coaches are listening to this, if a younger or a new coach is listening to this, you know, like I said before, preparation in and around getting out on the court is paramount. Breaking things down into 10-minute segments. And of course, whether it's passing drills, defensive drills, 5-on-5, whatever it looks like. Yeah, 5-on-5 stuff, we might go 15, 20 tops. But we like to go 10-minute segments, boom, switch. 10-minute segments, switch. 10-minute segments, switch. Coach and teach and teach and coach through that process. You know, manage to open the lines of communication if parents are involved with their young people, if they're under 18, you know, get the parents involved and let them see why you're doing what you're doing and how that'll improve their children's, you know, skills. You know, learn as much as you can through the internet, find really successful coaches. There's plenty of material that, people break down. I've got resources that I put on my website for people to reach out if there's a young coach who's you know coaching club or rep ball, domestic ball, and they want like a coaching clinic type of presentation that I've done that they can use, and I have YouTube clips on things that I encourage them to watch, skills and drills. They're more than welcome to reach out to me b-elite-basketball.com. That's my website. And then they can find an email me and I'd be happy to send them a PDF of like a coaching workout for their teams if they're interested.
Hmm. That's awesome. As many resources as possible. And there is a flood of, I think the perk of the internet at the moment, the flood of information.
Right. Right. Mm. You just got to be careful of what information you're taking in and what you're applying. I mean, some of it's over the heads of 8 and 9 year olds. Mm. Some of it's appropriate for 8 or 9 years old. You know, I think the responsibility of a coach for like 12 and under is teach fundamentals. Mm. The responsibility of someone, you know, teaching and coaching, you know, 13 on up is to really be focused and pick up the intensity of those fundamentals. And really teach a baseline so that when these young people are out on the court, they don't have to think, they just react. They react and they just use whatever moves they have in their bag of tricks to, you know, make it to the basket or play good defense. But the coaching at the young age is invaluable, probably more so than at an older age, because that's where these kids are learning the proper techniques in their offense and defense.
Mm.
But thanks for having me on. I appreciate that. All the best to you.
No, thank you very much for coming on the podcast and the time. And there's a ton of information in that. That's for sure. And I've learned lots, in particular, the US to Australian pathway, which I knew bits and pieces about, but honestly, I haven't dove into it too much. It definitely opened my eye on that. And just obviously your firsthand experience over in the US, which obviously I haven't gotten either. And I'm sure a lot of other people out there haven't been involved in the US basketball system either as well. So no, that's a really good insight. And thanks heaps, Coach Hout, for your time. Once again, Be Elite Basketball is the resource there. And be sure to hit him up on Facebook, Instagram, Be Elite. Perfect. Thank you once again.
Thanks you.
Thank you once again for listening to the Unlocked Basketball podcast with Coach Hout. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure to tune in for the next one. The release will be on our social media. Make sure to follow Locked In Basketball at Facebook and Instagram, and you can visit the website at www.lockedinbasketball.com.au. Make sure to stick around. We'd love to hear your feedback. Till next time.